Chapter 5. When Edmund came through the front door of his house, he was more than a little surprised to see Shaida Gorbani lounging in his chair, a goblet of wine in her hand, while her lizard was perched on the table snacking on a mouse. "Make yourself right at home, why don't you?" he asked, shaking off his cape and hanging it up. After stamping a bit, he took off his boots. These were right-left fitted with a good sole and oiled leather. He wasn't so into period that he was willing to wear the rotten footwear available in even the high Middle Ages. Once he had them sort of cleaned, he set them outside the door on the portico. They were coated nearly knee-high in mud. "Anyone else would simply translate from the inn to their door," Shaida said, taking a sip. "Or all the way into the house. Only our Edmund would stomp through the mud. Nice vintage, by the way." "I'm not our Edmund," Edmund replied, walking over to the matching chair and throwing another log on the fire in front of it. Fireplaces were inefficient methods of heating a room as large as the front hall, and he'd often considered breaking down and putting in a pot-bellied stove. But that was too out of the period for his tastes. So he put up with having to spend half the winter in front of the fireplace. Charlie sent it up from Down Valley. He's finally replicated some of the root stock from the Merovingian period. It's not nearly as undrinkable as most people thought. He sat down and stuck his feet up in front of the fire. "So to what do I owe the pleasure and privilege of a visit from a council member? You realize, of course, that our Edmund sounded uncomfortably like a royal we." "Come on, Edmund, it's Shaida," she said bitterly, stroking the lizard as it drowned the last of the mouse. "Remember? Sister of some redhead named Danae? Sister you were dating first?" Edmund smiled without looking at her and summoned a glass of wine for himself. "That was a long time ago, wasn't it?" "It wasn't me who disappeared for 25 years, she replied, taking another sip and twisting a strand of hair around her finger. "No, it wasn't. I still don't know why you dropped in." "We, the council, I have a problem," she said. "And you came to an old recreationist? What was the phrase? A man so stuck in the past his Latin name has Saurus in it? For help?" he asked. "Yes, Edmund, I've come to you." She stopped for a moment indecisively, then went on. "I came to you for a few reasons. One of them is that you're so steeped in the past that you understand it. And the problem I've uncovered hasn't been faced for nearly 2,000 years. I also came to you because you're a good strategist, as good a one as I know. Last but not least, I came to you because you're my friend. You're family. I trust you." "Thank you," he said, looking into the fire. "I've been wondering lately if anyone ever remembered I existed." "We all remember," Shaida said. "You're quite hard to forget. Also hard to live with, but that is another matter. I have to ask you for your word that you won't mention any of this to anyone. I'm not sure that what I think is going on is reality. I might just be going paranoid in my old age." "There's nothing wrong with paranoia," Edmund said with a shrug. "It's when you can't separate reality from fantasy that's the problem." "Well, I wish this were fantasy," she sighed. "Do you know Paul Bauman?"
"I know of him," Edmund said, shifting to look at her.
"I don't think we've ever met, if that's what you mean.
I think Paul is planning a, well, the only correct term appears to be coup."
Rachel had met Donna Forcine through Marguerite and cordially detested her. The girl thought about nothing but the newest fashion and looked like a young boy from all the sculpting. So she only exchanged a few words and then moved on to the buffet. She looked at it and groaned. There were two types of food available. The usually heavily spiced and extremely hot food that was all the rage, and an array of chocolate confections. She didn't like the current trend towards how hot can we make it, and simply grazing off the chocolate would probably put 10 pounds on her, all in the wrong places. As soon as she was 18, she was going to be sculpted down to a toothpick, whatever her mother thought, and have it locked in.
"Rachel! Rachel Gorbani! What do you think?"
The voice was high and squeaky, and emanated from a unicorn about the size of a large pony. Rachel picked up a strip of protein flavored somewhat like pork, immediately flashing back to one time when her father made her eat possum, and regarded the creature with puzzlement. The unicorn was a bright white, of course. She'd rarely seen much imagination in the unicorn look,
had golden hooves and horn and bright blue eyes. Very, she paused. Barb, is that you? Yes, do you like it? Barb Branson hadn't been the brightest brick in the load before she started off on change after change. Normally, there was no real threat to personality or intelligence integration in changes, but in Barb's case, normally, didn't seem to be working out. Rachel was sure Barb was getting dumber with each change. Very nice, Barb, Rachel replied. Very, very unicornish. That's because I'm a unicorn, silly! The girl trilled, spinning in place. I love it! Oh, there's Donna! She'll go spar! I'm sure she will, Rachel replied, heaving a sigh as Barb trotted off. I swear, even when I can change, I'm not going to get that addlepated. Finally, she loaded a float plate with some grilled protein, the same one that tasted, she swore, exactly like possum, and looked around to see if anyone had arrived who was worth talking with. The elf was still surrounded by a huge group of people, all hanging on to his every sibilant word, and there was a wall of mostly male bodies around the dragon, who in human form was on the far side of Gorgeous, even if her body was a bit on the busty side as well. Rachel got as close to the elf as she could, without being rude, hoping he would notice her and maybe call her forward. When that didn't work, she stood at the back of the group and tried to listen to the questioning at the center. Unfortunately, the conversations on the periphery blotted it out, and she couldn't even cast to the center because of the privacy shield so many of the people had up. The technique effectively created a pool of privacy around the centerpiece so that only those in the first circle or so could hear what he was saying. Rachel, there's someone I'd like you to meet, Herzer whispered in her ear. She stifled a sigh and looked around, then up some more. She had seen some large humans and humanoids before, but the person Herzer was with was very physically imposing. He was about 2.5 meters tall and broad in proportion. Herzer was not small, but next to this person he seemed slight. The stranger had dark skin, black, really, and not melanin black, but some other additive that made it look black as midnight. When she finally stepped backwards for a good look, she noticed some slight elven enhancements and wondered about them. Because of the netban on full elven upgrade, elven enhancements were generally frowned upon, especially by the elves. Adding an elven look was impolite. The thought came that she knew who she was looking at just as Herzer introduced them. Rachel, this is... You'd be Dionys Mechanic, wouldn't you? She asked with a nod. Protein strip? Indeed. His voice was mellifluous, and she suspected that if you didn't keep your wits about you, you'd drown in it. But Rachel, for some strange reason, found herself mildly repulsed instead. It was just too much. The size, the sardonic, elvish, and not elvish face... The voice set to charm the skin off a mink. When he took her hand, he kissed it and drew his thumb across the inside as he withdrew, sending a shiver through her body but leaving her emotionally even more determined to resist the charm onslaught. And you are the beauteous daughter of Edmund Talbot and the fair Danae Gorbani. I know your mother of old. He had moved forward to take her hand, crowding her personal space again and making her have to crane her neck to look up. But she refused to back up again. He could damn well hit her shields first. There was a slight emphasis, somewhat embarrassing, on the no. Or it would be embarrassing if Rachel hadn't heard her mother's comments about Mechanic. Danae had gotten out of the reenactor movement, but it didn't mean she didn't keep up with some of the politics. And Danae had much the same opinion of Mechanic that Edmund did. Rachel was sure that if she was here, she'd have an even lower one. On the other hand, Rachel was pretty sure Mother had never met Mechanic, so that was one flat lie she'd caught him in. I am sure you know my mother and father. They are well known in the reenactor movement. As you are, Dionys, she said with a simpering smile. No reason to incur his wrath herself and a lie for a lie. Whatever brings you here? I would think such a simple affair would not be to your tastes. Oh, Marguerite's mother and I have some dealings, you know, he said. And when I was invited, I was delighted to find that Herzer and Marguerite were friends. Now we're all friends together, he added, making an expansive gesture. It was only then that Rachel noticed the group with him. She couldn't determine what it was about the group of five that hovered at his back, but she couldn't find a thing to recommend them. One of them looked at her and positively leered, just like mechanic to somehow round up a group of total losses. But what in the hell were he and Herzer doing hanging out? She felt a flash of irritation and distress and put it down to having big sisterly feelings for the boy. Until recently, he'd had almost no social life at all. "So how do you know Herzer?" she asked, looking around at the gathering and ignoring his crowding. She snorted as a faint blue luminance appeared in the air between them as he leaned forward. "And you seem to be encroaching on my space, Dionys. That is most inconsiderate." She took a surreptitious breath, feeling security in the shield. He was trying to intimidate her, but she had been intimidated by the best of them, and even his size was not going to throw her off. "So sorry," he said in his deep, lilting voice again. "Surely we don't need shields between us." "But la, sir, we have hardly met," she simpered again, fluttering the elaborate fan that had come with the outfit. She now wished she'd worn something more suitable for running, or fighting. "Herzer is a recent acquaintance," Dionys said, giving the boy a clout on the shoulder. It looked like a friendly hit, but it still staggered Herzer, and there was very little friendliness in Mechanic's eye. "I met him at a reenactor meeting," Herzer said with a grin. "Do you know that he was nearly the king of Avalonia?" "And I would have been, were it not for the judges," Dionys said darkly. "Yes, I'm familiar with your rise in the ranks," Rachel said, trying not to let any humor enter into her voice. She had heard enough about Mechanic to know how viciously vindictive he could be. She had no interest in starting a war. It just wasn't worth the effort it would take. He regarded her for a moment, trying to discern if there was anything to that simple statement. "Are you part of the reenactor movement?" the giant finally said. "Oh, you know," Rachel dissembled. "Dad was forever dragging me off to those things. It wasn't really my sort of thing, and once I could put my foot down, I quit going. Some people love it, and more power to them. But all that dressing up in tabards and bell-bottoms, not me." "But that's a reenactor outfit," Herzer said. "Manchu Dynasty, right? And you used to love to study history." "Well, study," Rachel said with an honest chuckle. "Not live. And the period Nazis are the worst. I mean, the ones who go around with their clothes washed in urine, or not washed at all, trying to replicate the authentic life of the period. I mean, why?" She almost started as she drew what was apparently a real chuckle out of Mechanic. "Good point. But they were good times. Times for the strong." He grinned tightly and shook his head. "Not like these fallen times." "For the strong?" Rachel said with a grimace and a chuckle. "I suppose. But if being strong means fighting a battle with dealing with dysentery, I'll take these fallen times." "Well," Herzer said, just as a languid hand brushed him to the side. "What in the seven hells are you doing here, Mechanic?" the elf said. "Why, Gothariel, why ever shouldn't I be?" Mechanic replied with a thin smile. "Friends and acquaintances, don't you know? Yourself, of course, included. Because you were instructed to remain at least 100 meters from any of the Eldar," the elf said, ignoring the jibe. "I note also that you have made further adjustments towards the Eldar. They shall not be permitted." "I can change myself as I choose," Mechanic suddenly shouted, his voice echoing across the square, caught in one of those odd moments of silence. "Stay out of my genes." "Not using Eldar changes," Gothariel said mildly. "You know the law. You of all people should remember the law." Mechanic breathed deeply through his nose for a moment, and then spat on the ground in front of the elf. The spittle flicked off of the shield just short of the elf's feet. "Fisk you. I tire of this. The council will be informed of your further transgressions. For now you have two choices. You can be leave or be banished." "I have as much right," Mechanic started to say as Gothariel raised his hand. "Be gone!" The elf snapped, then snorted in satisfaction as the air in front of him was suddenly vacant. "Like the demon you so wish to be," he added, so softly that Rachel was sure that only she had heard. He turned to the five who had arrived with Mechanic and shook his head. "Begone as well! You have no purpose here." He turned to Herzer and frowned, the first expression that had crossed his face. "You arrived with him?" the elf asked, then shook his head. "No, separate. Are you with him?" "He's with me," Rachel interjected hurriedly, not sure why she did. "Rachel Talbot," the elf said to her, bowing deeply. It is good to see the Talbots are growing and thriving, a fine family, one that I have watched and sometimes watched after for these many generations. What were you doing talking to that filth? Trying to figure out how to break away, frankly, she said with a sigh. Thank you for interjecting. What is wrong? Herzer started to say. Later, Herzer dear, Rachel said, pinching him. I didn't quite catch your name, Lord Eldar. And I forgot to welcome you, Ithulia Eldar Cathane, she said, crossing her hands on her chest and bowing slightly. Ithul, m'lady, the elf replied, bowing again in return. I am Gothariel, rider of the Eastern Reach. I have known your father for much of his life. Your lady mother less. She is, however, a fine woman, and a splendid healer. Thank you, milord, Rachel said, curtsying deeply. She was glad she'd decided to bring robes. May you spend as many years in dream as the most ancient trees and pass to the west in peace. And skip the purple protein strips. Too late, the elf said with a small smile. Do you know what? Yes, I wasn't sure at first, but after the second try, it was distinctive. I wonder whose idea it was. Are you going to introduce me to your friend, Rachel? Marguerite said from behind her. Rachel could tell from the tart tone that she was pissed. Marguerite, Rachel said, turning with a smile and getting her first good look at her friend since her change. Marguerite had taken her normal form, except for the slight translucence that was mandated of fully nanite entities. She could, of course, change form at will, but she seemed to prefer her baseline look for the time being. This is Gothariel, rider of the Eastern Reach. That means he's something like an ambassador to the people who live in Eastern Norau. Hi, Gothariel, the elf said, bending to take her insubstantial hand and kiss it. He lifted it to his lips as if it were flesh and blood. That was... How did you do that? Marguerite gasped. The Eldar are different in more than simple appearance, the elf replied with a slight sigh. We have some dominion over the world that intersects with the real and the unreal. And now that you too have joined us in Faerie, you will have the opportunity to join us in Dream. Oh, Marguerite said, clearly unsure what he had just said. She turned to Rachel and waved her arms. Rach, isn't it great? Wonderful, Rachel replied, smiling and hoping her friend wouldn't notice her disquiet. But you didn't tell me about it. Oh, Mom and Dad cooked this all up, Marguerite said, gesturing around and at her semi-transparent body. It was like a total surprise. Ah, and they're planning a separation ceremony for next month. They're going to give me my independence certification and do a contract dissolution at the same time. Mom wants to go be Myrrh for a while. Dad doesn't know what he's going to do. What are you going to do? Rachel asked, trying to absorb that her friend was going to be declared an independent adult when she, Rachel, still had at least 2 years to go. It just wasn't fair. Have fun. What else? Marguerite said. Rach, I've got to circulate some more. We'll talk later. Hi, Herzer. Bye, Herzer. Sure, any time, Rachel said as she wandered off. She looked around and realized that Marguerite wasn't the only one who was wandering off. Gothariel had disappeared as well, entirely as if he'd ported and discorporated. But Herzer was still there, of course. Wow, that was intense, Herzer said, letting out a breath. I thought you and Marguerite got along better than a high and bye, Rachel said. She started to get less friendly when my illness got really advanced, Herzer said, a muscle working in his chin. He said with a winsome smile. You're sure of what you think? The smith asked. I've been reading people for a long time, Shida said. Paul is planning something. Something big enough that he thinks there won't be anything I can do about it. I can't imagine what it could be but seizing control of the council, and that would take seizing the keys. My coalition is solid. Well, I'll show you a few tricks, and there are a few things that you can probably get in the council chambers that won't be considered threatening by Mother, he said. Beyond that, there's not much I can do. Thank you, Edmund, Shida said. Just talking about it has helped. Cantor just gets very bearish, and Ungfacorn gets cryptic. You just get logical. I've had more practice, Talbot replied, both at thinking about violence and having people try to kill me. Comes of growing up wanting to be a hero, he added sadly.